Pagos.
Good morning, Your Honors. The pleasers of the court, and Mr. Machacek. My name is Don Pagos. It's my privilege and responsibility to represent Jeremy Hagenow. I represented Mr. Hagenow at trial as well. Today he's serving a 57-month sentence for being a felon in possession of a rifle that was found in his home and a .22-caliber pistol that was found in a vehicle parked outside of his residence. I raised four issues in the appellate brief I submitted on behalf of Mr. Hagenow. In the interest of the time we have today, I would like to just address the sentencing issues. The probation department started out with a level 20 offense because they said Mr. Hagenow was a serious violent felon. Because of his Indiana state law conviction for criminal confinement. The jury never made a finding that that conviction was a conviction of a crime of violence. If Mr. Hagenow had just been a plain felon, his offense level would have started at 12 instead of 20. So by the court, and not the jury, making the finding that the criminal confinement conviction was a crime of violence, that raised Mr. Hagenow's offense level eight levels in violation of Blakely and Apprendi.
On what basis was that determination made?
Well,
what documents were consulted?
There were no documents consulted that I know of, because we stipulated at trial that Mr. Hagenow had a felony conviction. We didn't stipulate to what the conviction was. We just stipulated that he did have a prior felony conviction. And the indictment was a one-page indictment that merely said he was convicted of criminal confinement. It did not allege he was a serious violent felon in possession of a firearm.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that the real problem here, that we don't know, I mean, whether the district court relied on information that was in an affidavit that was not included in the charging document, because there was no review of the documents, and so therefore there are Shepard problems and Lewis problems when we look at those cases?
Well, that's the problem, because the district court, first of all, had to go to the Indiana state statute and look up what criminal confinement was, because you could commit criminal confinement in two ways. It's not automatically a violent offense. So there's no evidence in the record or in the record in front of Judge Miller that Mr. Hagenow committed a serious violent offense. So the first thing Judge Miller or one of his clerks had to do was look up Indiana law that wasn't in a record to find out what the offense was, and then they had to decide, well, was it subsection A of the offense or subsection B of the offense, and then somehow they had to find what the facts and circumstances of that state court conviction were, and it's nowhere in the record. The probation department must have got them somewhere from the state court probation department.
Are you acquainted with the United States versus Shepard, recent Supreme Court case, which goes into the question of what documents are can be consulted with regard to the nature of a prior offense?
Well,
Are you acquainted with that case?
Not fully, Your Honor.
Well, it seemed to me that that was a problem here. I don't know what the answer is, but it seems to me that case presents a problem here with regard to what the procedure that was followed.
Well, there was a second problem with Judge Miller assigning the criminal history point to Mr. Hagenau for a state court conviction of possessing a police scanner. And
that's a separate issue, though, because that's what I was trying to get you to answer, too. I think Shepard is very helpful to you. And so, I mean, but I think that the Shepard problem is separate and distinct from the scanner.
Well, I think that you can tell by reading Judge Miller's transcript of his sentencing and his sentencing order that he felt strongly bound by the sentencing guidelines, that he was not merely using the guidelines as a guide or a reference, because I cited Indiana's statute in my objection to the pre-sentence report, because under Indiana law, possession of a police scanner is an offense similar to an offense that's set out in the sentencing guidelines.
What was his sentence for that offense?
Well, his sentence was 6 years of probation, and under that provision of the sentencing...
6 years?
Six months probation. And under that provision of the sentencing guideline, if you got less than a year in jail or 6 months of probation, it was a year in jail or less.
30 days in jail.
Or less than 30 days in jail, or a year of probation, excuse me. A year of probation or less than 30 days in jail. And Mr. Hagenau, I think, got 60 days of probation for possessing the police scanner. So if that one point were taken off of his criminal history category, it would have dropped him one level, and one point is a 10-month difference to Mr. Hagenau in this case. It puts him in a criminal history Category 3 instead of Category 4.
But you didn't actually argue that, did you, in your brief?
I did.
You did or you didn't?
You did.
I'm sure I did. I know I argued it.
You argued it.
I know I argued it at the sentencing hearing.
You argued, you pointed to the second category, sentences for the following prior offenses and offenses similar to them by whatever name they are known or never counted. Those are the ones you list in your brief.
Right. It was...
That's a separate point.
Right, that's a separate point.
But you didn't make the other point.
Which point is that, Your Honor?
The one you just made about that the term of probation was less than a year.
Well, because possession of a police scanner is not specifically noted in that section of the guidelines, like disorderly conduct, disturbing the peace, false informing.
But that's true, but look. Don't you think that this police scanner offense falls in one of it is similar to one of these two categories?
I do, and if it is similar, then that can't be counted as a criminal history point.
Right, but don't you think that if it's not similar to hitchhiking, loitering, and speeding, it would be similar to the offenses in the first section, right?
No, if you...
Careless or reckless driving, right? If you admitted that this police scanner thing was like careless driving or driving without a license or false information to a police officer, then you'd be home free, right?
That is what I'm admitting.
No, but that's not what you're arguing in your brief. You argue in your brief that it's similar to hitchhiking, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Not that it's also similar to this first long list of things as to which he's okay as long as his term of probation was less than 6 months.
Well, the guidelines give the list.
I mean, less than 1 year.
The guidelines list those offenses, and then they say, or offenses similar thereto.
Right.
And then the statute under which it's Indiana law makes it illegal to possess a police scanner also cites these same crimes.
You're not following my point. There are two lists of offenses, right? You don't
right.
realize that? There are two lists.
Right.
One of them totally excluded. The other excluded only if it's term of probation of less than a year. Your guy fits in both of these categories, right?
What? Are you talking about the bad check now?
The scanner.
Yeah, right, the scanner.
Don't you realize there are these two lists of offenses?
Right. And if they're the same or similar...
to either one.
Right, right? Then it can't be counted. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
But in your brief, you give up on the whole first set.
I must have miswrote it then, or
okay,
I'm
so
sure Your Honor
rely
did,
on that also.
I'm sure Your Honor didn't misinterpret it.
Now, on this
it,
criminal confinement, are you saying we should not look at the police affidavit?
I'm saying that you shouldn't go on a hunting or a fishing.
Should we look at the police affidavit?
No, because that contains hearsay and double and triple hearsay.
So, okay. Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Pagos. Mr. Macejczyk?
Macejczyk, Your Honor.
Macejczyk?
Yes.
Okay.
May it please the court, Mr. Pagos. Your Honors, my name is John Macejczyk. I'm an assistant United States attorney for the Northern District of Indiana, and I'm representing the government, obviously, in this case. And I'd like to start off by addressing the issues that Judge Cudahy and Judge Williams raised with regard to the issues of what, initially, your question, Judge Cudahy, about what did the district court look at when it determined that the underlying crime was a crime of violence. And that's contained in the PSI, the addendum to the PSI, on page 16. And that's numbered consecutively to the regular pre-sentence report. And there the probation department stated that the elements of the offense have been found in the affidavit for probable cause and lists information taken from the affidavit for probable cause from the state court. The judge was not presented with the charging information or the affidavit. He was relying on the summarization contained in the PSI.
Go ahead, Dick.
Well, I say that's not permissible under Shepherd, though, is it?
I think that before the Lewis case, it was a little bit unclear as to whether or not it was admissible. And having been a state court prosecutor, I was a little bit confused by what the Lewis, what Shepard meant as far as the charging information when it applies to Indiana charges, because we had always looked at the information and the affidavit of probable cause as one document. But I think the Lewis case, which was decided by this court back on April 19th, kind of clears that up. Because in the Lewis case, it was a case arising from Indiana, from Fort Wayne, I believe. And in that case, the district court judge, even though the underlying offense was a robbery, and this court said robberies are generally always crimes of violence, but the district court looked at the affidavit accompanying the information in that case and quoted from it And this court said you can't do that under Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
Under Shepard and Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have in this case is a similar situation.
Right, and you can't distinguish this situation from Shepard, can you?
I cannot.
Or Lewis.
No.
So that's a problem.
That is a problem.
So
now,
you admit error.
There's
on
nothing
that.
About this in the briefs at all. So
that's correct, Your Honor, and I didn't realize until just recently that issue was there. I'll start off by saying that issue was not addressed before. It wasn't raised in the briefs, so we have an issue of whether or not that's plain error.
And then because it's certainly error, and it certainly affected his sentence.
Yes, it did. There's no doubt about it.
So shouldn't we send this back?
Send it back for resentencing?
Yes.
I think that's probably the only thing that can be done under the holding of
mm-hmm.
Lewis. And I think that we'll be able to remedy.
Now, there's no need for a jury trial, though, is there?
No, Your Honor.
No.
There
but
isn't.
That was his argument, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
He wants a jury trial.
Well, under Almendarez-Torres,
right.
there is no
right.
jury right for
right.
determination of facts of conviction. Right. And that's what we have.
So he hasn't argued. He hasn't made the right argument. But you're saying that this is plain error, and therefore, right? If the case is, if he doesn't make the argument, then we can only reverse if there's plain error.
That's correct, Your Honor, and that's what I was getting to. I don't want to be intellectually dishonest with the court, though.
No, there's an error. We know there's an error, okay? There's a Shepard error. Now the question is, is it a plain error?
Well, error, first there's an error. It's plain. And does it affect the substantial rights of the defendant? And I think
right, I mean, plain in the sense of clear, but it has to be, you know, we discussed this in our Palladino opinion. It has to be, you know, a miscarriage of justice, something serious, right?
Well,
be a plain error.
In this case, there is a jump from a level 12 to a level 20 in the sentencing. And
yeah, but you see, what you're missing, I think, so now you're I'm going to make your argument for you.
Thank you.
The reason that, we discussed this, the reason that sentencing errors can be plain errors is that they can result in an illegal prolongation of a sentence just because a judge misunderstood what he could do. The kind of error involved here is the judge learned more about the nature of the prior conviction than he was supposed to learn. But if what he learned was true, see, the Shepherd line of cases has to do with not burdening the sentencing process by conducting a trial into the facts of previous convictions.
Mm-hmm.
If the judge erroneously did that, looked where he shouldn't have looked, but found true information which showed that the prior crime was very serious, what exactly is the injustice to the defendant? Now, maybe this affidavit is, you know, or the PSR is unreliable. Then you would have a serious problem. But if there's no dispute over what that prior crime was,
well, no.
Was there any dispute? Is there any dispute?
Well, I can only speak for the government. I don't believe that there would be. The original charges in that case were two counts of criminal deviant conduct, and the facts that the judge recited in his opinion were the facts that supported the original criminal deviant conduct charges, which did involve threats of force, which is what makes it a crime of violence. And there is no doubt that if we went back to the district court, that in the colloquy, the plea colloquy, we would be able to supplement the record, and admissions made in a plea colloquy are something that the judge can look at in as far as sentencing is concerned. So I believe you
mm-hmm.
thank you for making the point that there is the result would be the same, I believe, in this case.
But you are suggesting that it would be prudent to send it back for some kind of further proceeding in the district court.
Well, I'm just saying that I think that under Lewis, that's
well, and the
what,
record is a
are.
Little unclear here because we think he relied, the district court relied on the affidavit, the summary of the affidavit that was in the PSI. But the,
yeah, yes, Your Honor.
We don't even have the affidavit here, do we? I mean, we tried to check. I don't know if it's made it
no,
here
it's,
yet because I
not,
wanted to look at the affidavit to see, to get to that very question that Judge Posner raised. But
you're correct, Your Honor. It's not in the record, the affidavit. And I only know that that's where it came from because I have the affidavit of probable cause from that case.
How about the scanner? What's the answer to that?
Well, the answer to the scanner is exactly what the district court said, is that the scanner doesn't fall into either of those two categories under that portion of the sentencing guidelines. And
no, but that leads to a ridiculous result, right? Because, look, surely reckless driving is more serious than having a fuzz buster, right? But even if you're reckless driving, disorderly conduct, contempt of court, hindering a police officer, bouncing a check, leaving the scene of an accident, prostitution, these would all be considered more serious offenses than having a fuzzbuster, and or I guess a police scanner is different, right? That's listening to radio. I shouldn't call
that's
it.
Correct.
Yeah,
yes.
Police scanner. Okay, all of these are more serious offenses. Nevertheless, as long as probation of less than a year or imprisonment of less than 30 days, it doesn't count.
Well,
right? So how could it be that?
As the district court said, Your Honor, the difference between possession of a police scanner and, say, hindrance of a police officer, although I think that's probably the thing that comes closest, yeah. is that possession of a police scanner is a way for individuals that are engaging in criminal conduct to avoid being apprehended.
And to hinder the police in their apprehension.
But most
that's
of
the point.
Most of the people who buy police scanners, they're just nosier, right? They're not. Right?
Your Honor,
it's
I really wouldn't
minor.
Know because
it's
I don't.
It's a pretty minor offense, isn't it?
They might
be
on fires or something.
I would think reckless driving or contempt of court, disturbing the peace, driving without a license, driving with a revoked license, resisting arrest. They sound like substantially more serious offenses. So it'd be kind of really zany to have the police scanner because it happens not to be listed, even though the Sentencing Commission protected itself by saying, our offense is similar. Surely all these minor offenses are supposed to fall into one of these two. I mean, the Sentencing Commission cannot survey every misdemeanor and petty offense in the United States and prepare an exhaustive list. Now, if there was something about the scanner, which as you kind of half-heartedly suggest, makes it really serious compared to all of these things they've listed, well, that would be a good argument, but that's not persuasive.
Well, Your Honor, in United States Roy, this court said that when you're looking at those two sections, and I apologize, my time
no,
is
go
up.
Ahead, go ahead.
When you're looking at those two sections, you're supposed to apply a standard of common sense.
Right. And that's what I'm trying to do, right?
Common sense
says you don't let the person off because he didn't get more than a year's probation for prostitution, say. But if he has a scanner, wow, that's serious.
Well, I also want to mention, Your Honor, that the issue currently before the court that was raised by the defendant is he raised the objection to under Section 1 in the district court, and on appeal he's raising.
Oh, I know. He booted it again.
So we're looking at a plain
so
error
a plain
standard.
Error, yeah.
And in this case, I won't concede that there is plain error. because I don't believe this. There are substantial rights affected, unlike with the Lewis issue. Anyway.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Machista.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Pagos, time expired. But you can have a minute if you have anything further of note.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would just like to say that it should not be the job of judges to be criminal investigators. And you asked what right was violated if the judge went on this expedition like Judge Miller did and found that the information was correct. And the right that's violated is the right to a jury trial, which is just like we're talking about in Blakely. It's the government who should be doing that investigation. It's the government that can put in the indictment he committed, he possessed a firearm while being a serious violent felon to it because he did this. Judges shouldn't have two jobs. They shouldn't have to go searching and hope that the information they find is correct. I can take this case and make it go from 2 months on a level six all the way up to a level 20 just by whether he's a serious violent felon or not. If he's not a serious violent felon, I can make the argument that he had this gun and this rifle solely for fishing and hunting, which was a lot of evidence at the trial is that he was a sportsman. That's what brought him to the attention of the authorities, is that he shot a deer out of season. And the sentencing guidelines say if you possess a weapon solely for sporting purposes or collecting.
For illegal sporting.
For legal purposes, or if it's not used. None of these weapons were used illegally. It was ever alleged.
It was illegal to shoot
a deer with a shotgun.
Well, yeah, that was the other. But again, I can make a strong. I can make a strong argument that he's limited to a level six, is what the sentencing guidelines say. If you had the gun solely for sporting purposes. So I have a level six and a criminal category of three. That's 2 to 8 months. And he's serving 57 months now with no evidence before the court of what that so-called serious violent crime was.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Next case.